Welcome to Nerds at Church, a podcast about nerdery and the Bible. I'm Pastor Emily, and I use pronouns like they, them, theirs.
And I'm Pastor Kay, and my pronouns are she, her. In this episode, we'll discuss the fifth Sunday of Easter, which this year falls on May 15th. We do have one content notification for you this episode. We mention abusive people within the Christian community when discussing the deep dive.
Check out the episode description for links to the Bible passages and other references we make in this episode.
So our deep dive for this episode is on the first church controversy. Yay! Ooh. What was the first controversy that the Christian church had? That's a good question. The first controversy that the Christian church had to deal with was the question of, do people who are becoming Christian also have to be Jewish? And the eventual answer to this was no. But before we get into this in any detail, we do want to give you a few disclaimers. This is a more complicated issue today because of the relationship between Christianity and Judaism, which is 99% of the more complicated issue is because of how Christianity has treated Jewish people in history and also today.
Which is to say harmed.
Yeah, badly. Badly is the answer to that. And so we would like to ask you to be very careful when talking to either Christians who exoticize Jews or also to people who call themselves Messianic Jews. Messianic Jews do not speak for all Jews, and Christians who exoticize Jews are not treating them as equals and fellow children of God.
Mm-hmm. And just in general, as with everything, no religion, no community, no people are a monolith. Right. So some of the resources that are easily accessible to you are our podcast episodes where we've had Jewish people on to talk about Judaism. Specifically, for those of you who are our Patreon supporters or maybe want to become a Patreon supporter for the low, low cost of $5 a month, less than a fancy coffee, you can check out the conversation that we had with Rabbi Maurice Applebaum in our Monday-Thursday episode. We did a lot about Passover in our main Monday-Thursday episode, and the Patreon episode has a good chunk of time where we have a great conversation about the origins of Christianity and Judaism and how they're connected and how they relate to each other. So become a Patreon supporter today, and you get access to all of that because it's already up.
Yep.
Also, God has an everlasting covenant with the Jewish people. That is what we read in the Bible. That is what we believe. That is not erased or changed by Jesus showing up in the world.
Right.
We believe that. Our denomination particularly has stated that and affirmed that, which is saying something because Lutherans have an especially bad history with Jewish people. So,
yeah,
we're pretty clear on this one.
And it's literally all over Scripture.
So this first church controversy started out originally because Jewish followers of the way, which is to say all of the first followers of the way, were asking if they still had to follow Jewish holiness codes. So when we talk about followers of the way, that's what the early church used to call themselves and be called. So before they were Christians, they were followers of the way. So the original Jewish followers of the way were wondering if they still needed to follow the Jewish holiness codes, like keeping kosher, keeping the same festivals, those sorts of things. That is addressed in Acts 10 and 11. And part of that, Acts 11 specifically, is our first reading for this episode. So,
yep,
there's a connection there for you.
And then this question that originally applied to Jewish followers of the way expanded into, if Gentiles wanted to become followers of the way, do they have to become Jewish first? Perhaps especially if they had already realized that they weren't going to be keeping the holiness code afterward. And so this was addressed by the Council of Jerusalem, also known as the Apostolic Council, and the story of that is told in Acts chapter 15. There's also some question of whether or not Galatians chapter 2 addresses this as well, but the short version of that can be summed up in Acts chapter 15, verse 19, in which it's decided that they don't need to make things more difficult than absolutely necessary for non-Jewish people who want to turn toward God, essentially. And so basically they kept a very few prohibitions from the Holiness Code. There are a handful of laws about food, like not eating blood, which I guess I have to assume has been changed or was changed later, because there are Christians who do and have eat dishes that include blood. And no, I'm not just pointing at you, Scotland, although that certainly includes you. But also prohibitions against fornication, perhaps specifically temple prostitution in pagan temples, and also idolatry.
So, you know, a few things.
Yeah.
Also, if you're curious about how Gentiles came to be part of the followers of the way, you can check out our episode from 2 weeks ago on our episode for the third Sunday of Easter, where we talk about Paul, who used to be called Saul, who is credited with a lot of the expansion of Christianity to the Gentiles. So make sure you also check that out. So in general, as Kay mentioned, while there were some prohibitions that were kept, in general, followers of the way, so soon to become Christians, were allowed to eat several things that Jews were not. This was in part because of Peter's dream in Acts chapter 10 that we talked about. And they also did not have to be circumcised if they weren't already. So a lot of the kind of restrictions and things that are in place that kind of mark Jewish people as Jewish,
right,
were removed at this point. So that's the big controversy. It's actually pretty simple, pretty clear cut.
For us, but it definitely caused a big brouhaha back then. Like, they were concerned. This was a serious issue. This is not just a very lightweight, you know, let's build castles in the air kind of question.
Yes. It is simple for us to describe, and in the moment, it was a really, really big deal to try to figure out. And it set the stage for a lot of the church controversies that we have had since then. So some of the subsequent implications have to do with the question that was initially raised of who do we get to exclude, right? Are Gentiles included, and what are the circumstances under which they're included? But also, who else do we get to exclude? Can we exclude other people? Who do we get to exclude from leadership? And the answer to that is no one.
Yay!
So as we trace the lineage, right, you can tie this controversy and this question in with celibacy requirements, with gender requirements, with sexual orientation requirements, with race requirements. All of those trace themselves back to the question at the heart, which is, who do we get to exclude?
Exactly.
And because the answer is no one, that means we've got some complicated stuff we have to work out, because when we say we don't get to exclude anyone, that does not mean that an unrepentant abuser is permitted without restriction in the same place as the survivors of their abuse.
Right.
Right.
I would also maybe even say that this isn't how we should be phrasing the question. Maybe it's not who do we get to exclude. Maybe excluding people isn't a thing we get to do. Sometimes excluding people is a thing we have to do, such as with the example of abusers. And in that case, it's usually a matter of excluding them from specific places and specific people's experience. But it's not about get to exclude. That is not a treat that God offers us. We don't get to have a little exclusion as a treat.
Exclusion with a side of Thin Mints?
And possibly salami. Yeah, no, that's not how that works. Maybe we shouldn't be defining ourselves based on who we exclude at all, which definitely reminds me of the Easter sermon in the movie Shakula, which that sermon is all about. Maybe we shouldn't define ourselves on who we exclude, which is lovely. And one of the few sermons in Hollywood movies that I've ever actually liked. So most of them are pretty terrible, but that one's pretty good.
Yeah, I did recently, in our Horror Nerds at Church episode for Breaking Dawn Part 1, I did go on my own rant about movie weddings.
Oh, goodness. Oh, away. They're so terrible. Okay, well, to be fair, The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spigot is still hilarious from Four Weddings and a Funeral. I am totally on board with that one. But, like, most of them are terrible.
Yep. But when we are talking about this, and when we are talking about the times and the places where we need to, for the safety of the most vulnerable and marginalized, and for the well-being of the most vulnerable and marginalized, exclude people, it's not a simple exclusion. It's not, we kick you out and you are no longer
banished
welcome.
Into the darkness and will never be seen again. And
weeping and gnashing of teeth. No. It is restrictions and boundaries are put in place, but also there is an expectation, particularly for us in a larger denomination, but almost every congregation is part of some sort of affiliation or denomination, that there is another pastor who can potentially provide you pastoral care, a bishop who can be involved, another community of faith that specifically has ministries around repentance and reparative justice, all of those things. There are ways to move forward, but it requires repairing the harm done. So exactly. When we are excluding people, it is boundaries to reestablish safety in a place and then work to repair the harm that was done.
Yeah, and boundaries are good. And if you have questions about that, go read something by Brené Brown. So the question remains, so if we're throwing out a bunch of rules, which is not exactly how I'd phrase it, like that doesn't seem terribly diplomatic, but if we're not keeping some rules, then what rules do we need to keep? What rules do we need to follow and why? And like some of them seem pretty obvious. I guess. Don't be cruel. That seems like a pretty good sum up. For example, the law about not eating blood from Jewish Holiness Code is apparently connected to the rule of not eating flesh cut from a living creature, according to the Jewish Encyclopedia, which we can link to. And that is definitely a way to not be cruel. Like, good work. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Whereas the Scottish dishes that involve blood do not involve cutting things from a living creature. The Scottish are lovely people. Let's not. Yeah. And also, the rule of idolatry is still bad. Like, we are still on board with don't worship people. That leads to weird and bad places. Don't worship things. That leads to a whole separate list of weird and bad places. There are so many of them. And man, fiction has come up with a handful of them, too. No, just worship God. Only worship God.
And now there are a lot of different denominations with lots of differences. What might be considered a rule for one might not be considered a rule for another. Different denominations have different boundaries. The denomination that Kay and I are both a part of allows ordination for people of all sexual orientations and gender identities. Doesn't necessarily support or advocate for that, but it allows it. But there are other denominations where women are not allowed, where that's part of the rules. And there are rules around the sacraments or who has what roles in the community. And it's always worth asking why rules are in place.
Yeah.
For example, I thought that the rule about blood had to do with blood sacrifices and it was connected to idolatry.
And possibly it does, sure.
Possibly
it does.
That
might also be a thing.
But also, it definitely has to do with this other thing. So finding out the why of things helps in understanding. And then if the why of things doesn't make sense, you can be like, okay, but really? Maybe not.
And if people won't let you ask why, and it's not just a matter of maybe this conversation is better suited for another time, then maybe you need to find some other people. And that's not a good sign. Yeah.
But that's, like, there are some things that are practices in the Lutheran Church because of what is called good order, right?
Yes.
So we appoint.
It just makes things easier and keeps it less likely for people to do bad things. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
We set certain people apart to be responsible for the sacraments, for example. That doesn't mean that we set them above. We just set them apart. And it's for good order. Does it mean that if somebody presides at the sacraments in another capacity and they are not a pastor, that it's not valid? No, those are still valid. Not everybody tells you that, but it's true. So God always works in more expansive ways than us. And God works for justice.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why I love talking about this controversy and teaching this controversy as the First Church controversy is that we have actual proof that members of the church can disagree with each other without destroying the church in the process. And I think that's something we don't say out loud nearly often enough. So by all means, like, go read the Book of Acts. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there, and we don't spend enough time on it. And there's a lot of stuff that can tell us about how we can have guidance for these days. Because, trust me, life in the biblical world was just as complicated and weird as it is now. We just hear about more of it these days.
Indeed. Our first reading is Acts chapter 11, verses 1 through 18. Peter explains the vision God gave him, which made it clear that all people were welcome to be baptized. So one of the themes in this passage is the expansion of acceptance. Peter's describing his realization about Gentiles, but it also reminded me of when it happens with the Cylons in Battlestar Galactica. So spoilers for those of you who have not reached that far, but eventually there comes a point where some of the Cylons are accepted within humanity, and there is this, like, okay, maybe it is a bigger thing, maybe there is more going on, all of that stuff. But yeah, so Cylons do become integrated into humanity, and as they, like, settle in the final place that they settle, which is a kind of cool thing given all of the history between the two.
Yeah.
And then in verse 5, we read that Peter says, "I was in the city of Joppa praying, and in a trance I saw a vision. There was something like a large sheet coming down from heaven, being lowered by its four corners, and it came close to me." Which raises the question, okay, was it a picnic or a ghost costume?
Ooh.
Like, is this going to cover Peter and Peter's gonna walk around as a ghost? Or is it going to be, like, laid down like a blanket for Peter to eat off of?
I mean, if it's a ghost costume and it has those little holes in it for eyes, then stuff would be falling through the holes, right?
Presumably, but sometimes you don't do the eyes until you've tried it on. Right? Because you gotta get the eyes in the right spot.
Yeah. Not that, you know, getting the eyes in the right spot for most ghost costumes is terribly complicated, but...
It's true. It's true. Yeah. I just like the idea of God, like, putting a ghost costume on Peter.
It's Halloween, Peter. No, you don't know what that is yet. It's okay. I'll explain later.
Okay. It'll happen in a couple of thousand years.
And then in verse 7, we read, "I also heard a voice saying to me, 'Get up, Peter, kill and eat.'" And this reminds me of a webcomic that I've been rereading, which is called Digger, and it's by Ursula Vernon. And I spoke about this a little bit a couple episodes ago, but the main character is a talking wombat. And at one point, she is tasked with explaining morality in a nutshell to a feral demon child who does not have a gender, because they're not actually sure that they're a demon child, for that matter. But the last line of what she says as morality in a nutshell is, "Don't eat anything that talks." Well, in this webcomic, that's a little more complicated for them than it would be for us, because, like, for us, you'll notice that humans are not on the sheet of things that Peter is allowed to eat. Peter is not allowed to eat humans. Possibly not because humans can talk, like, God does not specify that, but humans are still on the list of don't eat that. And, like, also, when in doubt, remind people that cannibalism is bad. Sure, not a bad idea. Not exactly where I'm going.
Right? Check out our episode for the 13th Sunday after Pentecost with Reverend Alex Raby for more about cannibalism.
That was not actually the topic of that podcast.
No, that was about gay baking. We talked about cannibalism in the 13th after Pentecost and the 12th after Pentecost with Liz Williams-Webb and John Webb. So yes, both of those would be great ones that we will link to.
And also a bit in the Patreon episode with Rabbi Maurice Applebaum for Monday Thursday this year. Although that was mostly explaining Christianity's weird relationship with cannibalism and Jesus. But, like I said, for Peter, not eating anything that talks is simple. That just means don't eat human beings. In the webcomic Digger, human beings exist, and they talk. So Digger is saying don't eat humans, but Digger is also saying don't eat wombats, because obviously wombats talk, because Digger talks. And there are other species that talk, such as hyenas. Mm. And also, clearly, this feral demon child, or whatever the shadow child is, we don't really know by this point, talks. And so, you know, don't eat shadow children, or whatever, I guess. But, like, you know, don't eat anything that talks gets more complicated when there are several species that talk. And this also gets way more complicated in the story when Digger the Wombat, who is a herbivore, attends a funeral for a hyena who helped save Digger's life, and therefore is basically guilt-tripped into taking a bite out of the deceased hyena's liver, which is a part of their funeral ritual. And so technically Digger eats someone who talks, except that, you know, that hyena has already been dead. That's not Digger's fault. The rest of the hyenas are, like, guilt-tripping Digger into eating the thing because it's part of their funeral ritual, and to not do so would be disrespectful to the dead. It's complicated. And then Digger winds up trying to explain this to the feral demon child, who has no context for it whatsoever, and, of course, also Digger is a herbivore, and therefore her digestive system is not hooked up properly to digest meat, and so this is uncomfortable on a range of levels for her, is what I'm trying to say. So, yeah, but generally follow the rule of don't eat anything that talks, and you'll probably be okay.
Yeah, or don't eat anything while it is alive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also a good one, yeah.
Like, the occasional fly will fly into your mouth, and there's really no stopping that, but do your best.
Yeah. Then in verse 9 we read, "But a second time the voice answered from heaven, 'What God has made clean, you must not call profane.'" So, nothing is actually profane, because in fact God has made everything, and God is wonderful. This binary between the sacred and the profane is, of course, a hashtag false binary.
Yeah.
But one of the ones who, like, most embodies what God has made clean you must not call profane for me is the doctor, especially, like, the Matt Smith doctor, who just delights in humanity. Even when we mess up, even with all of our violence and harm, the doctor just, like, delights in the potential and creativity and resilience and amazingness of humanity, and I'm just like, aw, thanks.
Yeah,
that was really sweet. I like it.
I mean, it's sweet. On the other hand, he also occasionally treats us like slightly more intelligent hamsters, but
I mean, it's not entirely inaccurate either.
Yeah. And then in verse 17 we read, "If then God gave them the same gift that God gave us when we believed in the Lord Jesus Christ, who was I that I could hinder God?" Basically, Peter is saying, if God says we are both or all worthy of God's gifts, then I don't get to disagree, because they're God's gifts to give out in the first place. Which sounds entirely reasonable, and also immediately gets the Eurythmics song, "Sweet Dreams Are Made of This," stuck in my head.
Sweet dreams are made of these.
Who am I to disagree? Exactly.
Travel the world at the seven seas, looking for some.
Okay. Annie Lennox is awesome. And then our next reading for this episode is from Revelation chapter 21, verses 1 through 6. The author describes a vision of a new heaven and a new earth without suffering, when God will make all things new.
One of the themes in this passage is the idea of newness. This is something that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is doing right now. They're making a lot of newer characters, newer heroes that are getting shows and comics and publicity, and it's a much fuller and more diverse cast of heroes, crew of heroes. Yeah. So it's a fuller representation of God's creation. I love the ways that they're doing it. Like, Ms. Marvel is now a Muslim from New Jersey instead of this, like, white, blonde-haired woman. And they do it in a way that, like, honors the cultural context of the people. Like, it is not just it's not like Twilight, where, like, Native people are just, like, act like white people, but
sure,
are cast as Native. Yeah.
Sure. And then in verse 2 we read, "And I saw the holy city, the New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband." And, you know, every time I read this verse, it just snags a little bit for me. This is an interesting place to discuss cultural differences between the ancient world and nowadays. I was once a bride, I am married, and I was not adorned for my husband. Like, I didn't object to my husband seeing me all dolled up, that was fine. But, like, that was not the reason I got all dressed up. I was not looking to impress him. Like, I was interested in impressing certain people. He was not especially on that list, because I knew he was already impressed with me, because guess what? We were getting married. There were, on the other hand, some people I was looking to impress, but I wasn't worried about him. Mostly I was adorned for the pictures that would be taken of me that I would then get to share with people later. I just find this whole concept interesting because it that was not on my mind that mm-hmm. day. I had people I wanted to make an impression on, but like I was not worried about making an impression on him. So
yeah, well, and there's not the same the practices around marriage and
yeah. I picked him. I was not sold to him.
Yeah, very different at the time.
Yeah,
you don't have to impress.
It was not an economic or political decision. Yeah. So.
And then in verse 3 we read, "And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'See, the home of God is among mortals. God will dwell with them, they will be God's peoples, and God himself will be with them.'" So I immediately thought of Maui from Moana, because Maui does make his home as a demigod among mortals. And, you know, there's a complicated nature of, like, seeking the approval of humans because he was neglected by his own human god parents.
Sure.
But he throws in with the humans.
Yeah.
Which is lovely.
Yeah, I read that verse and I definitely thought that the verb tenses in this are a little confused about whether we're talking about, like, now or the future in terms of when God is going to exist with mortals. But I do like the idea of worshipping a God who lives among us rather than a God who is separate and unreachable. Because, like, long-distance relationships are hard work. Just ask the Doctor in River Song. They can be a mess. So.
Yeah. As you were saying that, I was definitely picturing Joan of Arcadia, where God just, like, shows yes. up in her life as all these different people. And
always at the worst possible moment. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Which, frankly, is not that dissimilar to some relationships anyway, but.
Yeah. So she might have a different opinion about, like, God dwelling among us than we do, but.
Well, that's how God's sense of humor definitely shows up in my life, but.
Truth. Yeah. And then in verse 4 we read, "God will wipe every tear from their eyes. Death will be no more. Mourning and crying and pain will be no more, for the first things have passed away." And this is, like, decidedly one of the goals of the Giver, the community that's described in the book, The Giver. But it definitely doesn't work that way, like, at all. Like, they say that they're getting rid of death and pain and all of this, but they just, like, put it behind closed doors and don't let anybody talk about it or see it. And also what disappears is, like, the really extreme joys and gifts and literally the colors.
Yeah. Also, it turns out that not letting people talk about difficult things does not make difficult things go away. Huh, Florida?
Anyway.
Also, maybe not all of those things are actually difficult in the first place.
Yeah. But maybe they're actually pretty simple. And then our gospel reading is John 13, verses 31 through 35. "At the Last Supper, Jesus gives his disciples one last commandment, to love one another as he has loved them." So one of the themes in this passage is the idea of, like, glorifying God and what glorification consists of and who glorifies. And this is not the same as glory from Buffy, who, although I gotta say, God's glorification isn't so much the, like, glory of winning a competition kind of thing like a lot of people talk about it today. So maybe it is closer to a mighty demon of destruction and chaos than to what we think of when we think of glory. Because glory is, like, God, when God is glorified, right, like, especially in John, it's Jesus being crucified and Jesus on the cross. And so.
Awkward.
Yeah, it's a little awkward. But I also don't know exactly what glory is yet in Buffy because we haven't gotten there yet. So.
Okay.
Who knows?
Also, it kind of sounds like we're not really clear on what glorification is yet, so that's fair.
Maybe we'll do a deep dive in it sometime.
And speaking of which, when we read verse 32, we read, "If God has been glorified in Jesus, God will also glorify Jesus in himself and will glorify him at once." Okay, yeah, I still have no idea what this verse means. Like,
this is one of those, like, John sounds like Paul kind of passages.
Yeah. A decent chunk of my general view on God is that God is big enough and old enough to take care of God's self. And, like, God does not really need a lot from me. There are some things that God wants from me, but God does not need much from me. And, like, God's glory is good. Like, God has that down. I'm not concerned. And so, I also think it's a good idea for us to remind people that even those of us with serious theological and biblical training, and like, yes, I was a philosophy major, I like to throw that one out occasionally, we still don't get some of this stuff. Like, people have tried to explain this verse to me, and at some point, their voice just turns into one of the adults from the Muppet Babies TV show. I just... wah, 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 wah.
Isn't that from Charlie Brown?
Also them. Yes, same thing. And, like, I just cannot bring myself to care. I'm sorry, I'm sure it's very important, but also I think God can handle it. And so, like, asking me to understand this is like asking Elmo to understand calculus, okay? It just, don't worry, it'll be okay. I don't think that's necessary. I'm not trying to make light of the Bible. I want to make that clear. There are parts of the Bible that are super important for us to care about because it makes big differences on our everyday life. This does not sound like one of them. This does not sound like it has a huge impact on how we treat other people. If somebody disagrees with me on that and would like to tell us at some length about why, then please send your emails to nerdsatchurch@gmail.com.
Uh-huh. Speaking of Elmo, the next verse, verse 33, we read Jesus as saying, "Little children, I am with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and as I said to the Jews, I now say to you, where I am going, you cannot come." That reminded me in Battlestar Galactica about Starbuck's trip to Earth. Starbuck, like, goes to Earth in this weird way that's never quite explained. And no one could follow her, either. Just like no one can follow Jesus. Except that they kind of could have after she got back, but they didn't follow immediately, so then they couldn't quite get there, and it was hard and complicated and all of those things.
Okay.
But, yeah, the, like, not following and following, and who has the directions on this ship anyway?
And would they ask for directions if they needed to?
That.
GPS. No. And then in verse 34, we read, "I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you should also love one another." And so this immediately brought to mind the "get you a guy who" meme. Get you a guy who looks at you or who does this the same way as somebody else does that other thing. Yeah. Basically this is get you an everybody who looks at you and treats you the way Jesus does. Which, like, good goal. I think it's going to take a while, but that's fine. It sounds good. It does not probably have to involve quite as much painful, long-lasting death. I'm just saying. But
I mean, Jesus' death wasn't exactly long-lasting.
But well, the process of dying was kind of what I was going for. Yeah, the slow and painful death.
Well, fine then, if you're talking about that part.
Yeah. But yes, also, like, just less general suffering. I hope. Best of luck with that.
Yeah.
So.
But a willingness to, if that is what is called for.
Self-sacrificial and generous love, by all means.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love in that one that it's a communal thing, too. Right? So I looked at that, and I was thinking about love and the Travelers, the TV show, where they're like, okay, the world is awful. Everything is wrong. And so they try to help the world by, like, going back in time and trying to get people to do things, like, trying to save people from this one thing, and then trying to get people to love and care for each other and all of this stuff, instead of the harm that was done, and trying to get people to care for creation better instead of the harm that's done to it. All that. And ultimately it doesn't work and they, like, restart the experiment all over or something. But
okay.
Yeah, it's a okay. That's one way of doing it.
Sure.
But yeah, but it's about, like, in Travelers they're sacrificing for the sake of all of humanity, but also as you were talking about it, right? Like, it is a self-sacrifice, but in a mutual way. It's love one another, not love other people who don't love you back. Not that you can't, but...
Also, sometimes that's just going to happen. But yeah. And now, for our newest segment, let's make a Muppet musical. And we will cast Muppets and possibly the occasional token human in the Bible scenes that we've talked about. Personally speaking, and I do want to be kind of careful about how I say this, I am envisioning the dream that Peter is having, and I want to make it clear... The Electric Mayhem Band is not on the sheet that Peter is thinking. We are not eating Muppets. Do not eat Muppets. Don't eat anything that talks. But I would think that as soon as that sheet starts to come down, the Electric Mayhem Band would, like, show up in a corner and start playing. Like, that seems like a scene that needs a soundtrack to it, and I think they could do that nicely. So.
That is fantastic. I was thinking about that passage as well. And it'd be real ironic if Miss Piggy was...
Oh, no, don't eat anything that talks. I think that definitely
right,
is
so
still
kept. That's a dilemma. There's nothing on the sheet can be a Muppet.
Right.
But, like, could Peter be Miss Piggy? I feel like she
it
is,
can't
like,
be
picky
talking
enough.
Muppets. Like, there are those Muppets that are vegetables that the Swedish chef winds up cooking, but they don't really talk, do they? I don't think.
I don't know. I just
like, I feel like the Swedish chef would definitely be looking at that sheet and, like, sharpening his knives, right?
Yeah.
It seems. He would be very excited. Bork,
bork, bork. Yeah, but I do think Miss Piggy as Peter would be kind of fun and ironic.
Oh, that would be fun.
Because she's a pig.
Peter is so enthusiastic about everything. And yes, and I love that. That is hilarious. And, like, she loves explaining things, usually to Kermit, but also to other people. And that seems very Peter-esque, too.
Yeah. And so one of the, like, fun things about that, though, too, is, like, she is, you know, decidedly not kosher, and yet is going to be Peter. And, yeah, I like this. Oh, we're like, having trouble coming up with humans, though. So if you have any ideas for other Muppets or even humans, you should definitely let us know. We post this on Facebook and Twitter every Friday. So the Friday after the episode comes out and before the Sunday the episode is talking about. So you can check it out there and add your 2 cents to the conversation.
You know, it's never exactly specified. Like, God is lowering the sheet, clearly. But, like, is God physically lowering the sheet that is happening? Like, is God holding onto the corners? And in that case, is God being played by a human in the scene?
Ooh,
or, like...
That's dangerous. Yeah. Well, I was thinking, you know,
like... I don't want to cast God.
You know the, like, things where you tie the handkerchief corners all together and put it on a stick and, like...
Like a hobo sack. Yeah, I think they're... I think that's actually the term for it, is the thing.
Okay. I was like, I don't know.
Like, also, I think that they actually did call themselves hobos.
Okay. But. I don't know about that, but okay. Yeah, but, like, I'm, like, imagining that's, like, just God's hand. So, like, maybe it's, like... Morgan Freeman's hand, right? Just like
that seems very Monty Python-esque, but yes, I do like the idea. It does seem like a slightly Monty Python's scene.
And now for our Patreon thank you. We do a quarterly thank you for our Patreon supporters until we get so many that it is unreasonable. So for now, we are still doing good with that. And we are really grateful to our long-term Patreon supporters, Bridget Watley and Pace Warfield, as well as our new Patreon supporters, Erin Holmgren and Lori Kaiser Boswell. Hopefully I pronounced your names right, but if not, let me know and we will fix that pronunciation and clarify in an upcoming episode.
Thanks for joining us. Catch us next time when we'll discuss nerdery connections to the scripture readings for the 6th Sunday of Easter with our special guest, Pastor Carla Christopher. This podcast has been produced by us, Kay Roloff and Emily Ewing. For more fun, check us out on Twitter and Facebook at Nerds at Church or contact us at nerdsatchurch@gmail.com.
Also, if you like what you've heard, rate us or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, or wherever you catch your podcasts. If you want access to our uncut guest episodes and interviews, live Q&As, and more, support us on Patreon at patreon.com/nerdsatchurch. It's cheaper than a monthly Netflix subscription.
Also, let us know on Facebook or Twitter who you would cast for Let's Make a Muppets Musical for this episode.
As the ancient Christians said,
Pax vobiscum.